I'm Julie Burstein in for Leonard Lope today on this gray, almost summer afternoon here in New York. And my next guest is Jonathan Mooney. He's a lecturer who graduated with honors from Brown University and co-wrote a book called Learning Outside the Lines. As a kid, though, he rode one of those small school buses that you see to special ed classes, along with other kids who had physical, mental, and learning disabilities. He felt different, not, quote, normal. And even as an adult, a voice was always making him feel like he was still on that short bus, different from everybody else. In sort of an effort to get rid of that voice, he fixed up an old short bus and hit the road to meet other people labeled as disabled throughout the U.S. And he writes about that trip in a new book called The Short Bus, A Journey Beyond Normal, published by Henry Holt. I'm pleased to welcome Jonathan Mooney to the Leonard Lope Show today.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's nice to have you here. For how long did you actually ride the short bus as a kid, or was that just shorthand for what you were feeling?
Well, I grew up in special education throughout the entirety of my education.
Sometimes it was in school, and sometimes it was in a special setting.
That's exactly right. So the short bus as a physical reality was not as pervasive as my experience in special ed, but it really was a symbol for that experience. For the listeners out there, the short bus has sort of entered our vernacular as a trope or a symbol.
Well, there was the movie recently.
That's right. That's exactly right. It's entered our culture as a symbol of difference, as a symbol of disability, and quite honestly, as a pejorative symbol of difference. You know, I was called a short bus rider growing up, and that was not a compliment.
It's interesting. In the book, you really are exploring this whole idea of difference and our culturally, our kind of antipathy towards the whole idea of difference. Is that something you felt from a very small child?
Very much so. I mean, this book at its core, and my personal journey is very much about exploring the tyrannical idea of normalcy. You know, I mean, that's really what I was struggling with, you know, because I had a different mind, I read differently, I had a different way of paying attention. You know, I was labeled dyslexic, labeled ADHD. I was told I was stupid, crazy, and lazy at a very young age. And that stemmed not so much from my experience with a medical disability per se. It really stemmed from this myth that there was a mind that I should have, that there's a normal I could be.
Well, that you should fit with everybody else rather than be your own self.
That's right. And it's really a myth. I mean, many people don't realize that the word normalcy did not enter the English language until the 1850s. Before the word normal or normalcy, we had the ideal. But it's a radical paradigm shift from the ideal to the norm. The ideal is something that, by definition, you can't obtain. You can't be ideal. But the norm is
strive for it.
And it can be enforced.
Yeah.
And the norm can be enforced, mm-hmm. which it was in my life.
Did you find, when you were contemplating this journey, that you were hoping it would allow you to then feel, quote, normal when you were done?
It's an interesting paradox. I very much began this trip as a sort of big, fight against normalcy and the idea of the norm as a way to live your life. Very much so, you know. But by the end of the journey, as a result of the extraordinary people that I met 13 extraordinary individuals, 45,000 miles, almost all 50 states I traveled through. And at the end of that journey, the interesting paradox was what's not normal. You know, I spent time with a young woman with Down syndrome living a beautiful life in Seaman, Ohio. It was normal to have Down syndrome. You know what I mean? That became a norm for me.
In her family, it did.
That's exactly right. I spell at a third grade level today. I read in the 12th percentile. I have the attention span of a gnat, literally. It was normal for me to have those things by the end of this journey, not something to be ashamed of. And that's the real heart of this book.
Did you find that you wished for a different kind of ending for yourself, or did you find that it really brought you to a place that made you feel comfortable with finally who you are?
Well, the goal for the book as a whole was always to leave the short bus. I mean, literally,
that one day you'd get off of it and you could leave it.
That's
behind.
That's exactly right. And literally, I mean, I bought an old short bus, I converted it into an RV. I lived out of it for 4.5 months, and the goal was to drive to my old elementary school, leave that bus there, and physically be done with it. But by the end of the book, I found I couldn't get off it. Because so many beautiful, exceptional people like Candy and Katie, the woman with Down syndrome in Ohio, like a good friend of mine, Kent Roberts, with ADD, who's a performance artist, all those people came into my life not despite, but because of these experiences of being different. In some ways, I found a community that I never had riding the short bus again, which is an interesting paradox.
And it was, you focus on art too in this bus. Not only do you go and see a number of artists, like your friend Kent, who's a performance artist and writes for The Onion and has written a mm-hmm. book of Yo Mama jokes. And
wonderfully titled Portrait of Yo Mama as a Young Man, by the way. Written by two white guys. So,
you also make a pilgrimage of sorts to some art destinations in the Southwest, including Walter de Maria's Lightning Field, which is a giant landscape with mm-hmm. poles in it, mm-hmm. where you proposed to your now wife.
That's right.
Did you initially going into this think, okay, art and difference, I'm gonna look at where those two things connect?
I wanted to originally sort of explore that, I think, fine line between art, creativity, and disability in a part of this book. And the way that, in some respect, creative people have historically been marginalized and pathologized as disabled in some respect. I mean, the sort of historical narrative around creativity and being an artist is almost one of having an affliction of being disabled. So I certainly wanted to explore that that sort of avenue or vein in our culture. But I also wanted to look at the way that creativity can transform an individual, can transform a community, can transform a sense of self. I was very inspired by the work of a philosopher of art and education named Maxine Green, who is at Teachers College, a professor emeritus, who believes that the imagination is a moral force because it allows us to imagine different realities. And many of the people who in this book were marginalized by the label of abnormal, they imagined different realities for themselves. They used creativity and the power of the imagination to redefine themselves and to free themselves from that tyrannical idea. And I wanted to sit with that and see how people did it.
And what I took away also is that it's hard to have something new if you don't have something different. And so the idea of difference is essential in this kind of creative thinking. Otherwise, you're just, you're rewriting Shakespeare. As you write in your book, you could, you know, if you had enough monkeys with enough typewriters, you could have Shakespeare. But to have Walter de Maria's Lightning Field, you need Walter de Maria.
That's right. And one of the big tent ideas of my work as a speaker and as a writer is this idea of cognitive diversity. You know, we have the idea of biodiversity as intrinsic to a healthy planet, which we're losing, as the previous guests talked about in the beautiful photography and documentary that you mentioned and that they did. We have this idea of biodiversity, but I think there's an analogous experience in our culture where we're losing cognitive diversity. This idea that there's all these different types of minds, but we're norming those minds. We're standardizing those minds. We're coming up with more and more labels for those different minds, opposed to seeing them as part of a fabric of neurodiversity that is intrinsically responsible for creativity, intrinsically responsible for entrepreneurship in some respect, and as intrinsically linked to a healthy human society.
As a parent and someone who's involved in my own child's education, and I have a child who has been labeled cognitively different, I had some questions for you about what, as adults and as parents, looking at kids who are growing up with these sorts of issues, what can we do to help value the difference that they bring, which may be a kind of genius in one aspect and real difficulties in other aspects of their lives?
Well, two things come to mind. First and foremost, and I think that in your question you had the seed of an answer, we have to understand, and this is a real tenet from the disability rights movement, we have to understand that disability is inherently a social construct, meaning the disability rights movement really believes that somebody in a wheelchair, somebody with dyslexia, is disabled not intrinsically, but is disabled by the interaction of their difference with environment.
With what we're expecting.
With what we expect, mm-hmm. with the buildings that we build, with our own biases, with the curriculum that we design. And that's a real fundamental paradigm shift because it allows parents and educators to see Jonathan and understand that Jonathan was not disabled by dyslexia. Dyslexia was not my disability. My disability was dysteachia, you know? My disability was this myth that there's one type of mind. So that's an essential paradigm shift to make as a mom because it allows you to stop thinking about what's wrong with my child.
It's looking for the assets rather than the
deficits, yeah. The disorder. And yeah. Then it leads us down the path of not fixing our child per se, but modifying the environment. And the profiles, every single profile in my book, every single person I spend time with, that's a core unifying theme, that they made a shift. I'm not broken. The environment's broken. How can I modify the environment?
Or how can I just be myself and the environment be damned?
That's exactly right. And that's the latter piece. Every single individual, myself included, who survived this experience had a furious advocate. And you used that word for your previous guest who grew up at Warm Springs.
Yes.
Furious advocate, right? That was my mom. You know, my mom, 5 foot tall, Irish American woman. She has a squeaky voice like Mickey Mouse. She curses like a truck driver. You know, you did not want cursing Mickey Mouse in your office, right? But where was she every single day after school? She's in that office, you know, fighting for me. Every dog in the neighborhood was running away, but that was okay. My mom fought for me. And in that act, she taught me that I wasn't broken. And that is the single most important message a mom, a dad, grandmother, or an educator can give a young person with a cognitive difference.
Is you are who you are.
That's right.
And that's great.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much. I've been speaking with the author Jonathan Mooney. He has written a book called The Short Bus, A Journey Beyond Normal, and it's from Henry Holt. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.